And welcome back to Strong Style History, where we try to make sense of historical New Japan Pro Wrestling. I am your host, Jeffrey Wessel. With me today is my co-host, Lawrence O'Brien.
Hi, howdy, everybody. Sorry if I sound like garbage. Dealing with some allergies right now, so
Tis the season for that, so...
Yeah, so I probably sound like like 10 years older than I actually am. So
sounded kind of nasally, like Ben Stein, only probably less of a probably less of a crazy right winger at that point. But anyway, you can find Lawrence and I. We do the Strong Style Story podcast at strongstylestory.podomatic.com or on iTunes, searching the Strong Style Story podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Strong Style Story without the E in style. And Lawrence, you can be found where?
At LOB_3, you know, whatever, on Twitter. usual at. So.
Here on Strong Style History, we try to go through, a wide array of historical points for New Japan Pro Wrestling, both the sublime and the ridiculous, and today we're definitely going to be focusing on the ridiculous, probably some of the most ridiculous matches New Japan ever ran, and the fact that they did two of them just years apart is sort of mind-blowing in the context. But today, Lawrence and I are going to be discussing the Island Death Matches that occurred.
Oh boy!
This may be a difficult one, especially when we cut. Well, we'll get to all this. But to start with, the first Island Death Match was held on October the 4th, 1987. Between the founder of New Japan Pro Wrestling, Antonio Inoki, defeating Masa Saito in a two-hour match around Ganryujima Island that we can only really say it was a long wrestling match. That's pretty much the only real thing we can say about this.
2 hours is not an exaggeration, by the way. Jeff is not exaggerating here. He's not being like I am sometimes and using hyperbole. It was literally like 2 hours.
It was an actual 2 hour wrestling match.
Yeah.
Which we've seen cases where those can actually be kind of okay. City of EF Mid-Atlantic did Trevor Lee and
Roy Wilkins.
And Roy Wilkins went the distance on that, and that was a very good match.
Yep.
In context, but there's not all. I mean, there's some context to these matches, including some you may not expect. So, just to give some background to all this, the story of the first Island Death Match really starts on April the 6th, 1984. And this was a time in which, at the time, the World Wrestling Federation employed a gentleman by the name of Ken Patera, who was refused service at a McDonald's because he went up to it after hours, but the lights were on because it turned out they were filming a commercial there. This was in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Well, according to police, Patera threw what they described as a boulder through the restaurant's window in retaliation. After the wrestlers, after the officers responded to that at the hotel room of Ken Patera and Masa Saito, who at the time was in the WWF, teaming with Mr. Fuji.
Yep.
they were rooming together, and according to police, Patera and Saito both assaulted the officers, taking turns beating them until backup arrived to subdue them. So, Masa Saito would end up doing 2 years in prison after a conviction of battery on a police officer. Now, there is some evidence to suggest that perhaps Patera did not actually do the deed. It was somebody else, and Saito was not at the McDonald's at the time, but, you know, the conviction happened, and Saito did his time. So following that, he ended up back in Japan and would get into a feud with Antonio Inoki. And that kind of went back and forth for a while, but this was the conclusion of that feud. It was an island death match held on Ganryujima Island between, and I had to look this up, between Honshu and Kyushu in the Japanese island scheme. And you can get to it from Shimonoseki Harbor. Now, the context of this was, I guess this is such a blood feud that they could only do this on an open air island. So why do they pick this island? Well, historically, Ganryujima Island, which at one time was known as Funajima Island, was a it was the site of a very famous sword fight between two swordsmen, the legendary Miyamoto Musashi and Sasaki Kojiro, which Miyamoto would win. And this is one of the legendary sword fights from feudal Japan. Now, there are some details to this fight that are of some historical controversy, which will actually come into play during this match, believe it or not. But it doesn't excuse the fact that this match was probably hot garbage when you really look at it.
Oh, no. Well, first of all, I always forget about the Ken Patera story. That is one of my favorite, all-time favorite, just wrestling on the road, like disaster stories.
It pretty much ended Patera's career, too, because I remember when I remember when he disappeared from WWF programming, and then, you know, I didn't know years later why that was.
Oh, man. That one always gets a laugh out of me. And then just to top it off, like, just him and Saito just were just so, like angry that they just decided to just destroy the officers that showed up to their hotel room. Oh, my goodness. What a disaster. Holy cow.
Yeah, it kind of took... Yeah, like I said, that incident pretty much ended Patera's career, and you know, Saito, of course, would go back to Japan.
Kids, don't do roids.
Yeah, seriously, do not. So
this is what happens: you throw boulders through McDonald's when you get angry.
Allegedly, you allegedly throw.
Yeah, he said, "Oh yeah, I was like a former employee." It's like, yeah, okay, Ken.
Yeah, who knows what the truth is? The fact of the matter is that they did time. So yeah, that's all we can really say.
Oh, Jesus! Oh my goodness!
So. On the morning of October the 4th, 1987, both Antonio Inoki and Masa Saito traveled to Ganryujima for this match. And,
oh, yeah. It looked pretty dramatic.
Yeah. the footage of them coming over on the boats from Shimonoseki Harbor.
Masa Saito, like, doing, like, his jumping jacks and everything, like, with his lazy eye going. It was absurd. It was just so absurd. Like, it was, like, the opposite Rocky IV, like.
Yeah, and to start this match, it took a while to start this match.
No, you think?
Because Inoki took his sweet ass time even getting into the ring. Like, he would barely come out of his tent because they had tents set up.
Oh my God.
And Inoki had to be like coaxed out, and it was ridiculous. But in historical context, they were in their own way reenacting the fight between Miyamoto Musashi and Sasaki Kojiro, because Musashi arrived late to the fight.
I'm going to read now from
Wikipedia their entry on the duel between Miyamoto Musashi and Sasaki Kojiro. Starting as the duel was short. Musashi killed his opponent with a boken, that is a wooden sword. The legends say he had carved from an oar used on the boat that carried him to the island. Musashi's late arrival is controversial. Sasaki's outraged supporters thought it was dishonorable and disrespectful, while Musashi's supporter thought it was a fair way to unnerve his opponent. Another theory is that Musashi timed the hour of his arrival to match the turning of the tide. The tide carried him to the island. After his victory, Musashi immediately jumped back in his boat, and his flight from Sasaki's vengeful allies was helped by the turning of the tide. Another theory states he waited for the sun to get in the right position, and after Musashi dodged a blow, Sasaki was blinded by the sun, after which Musashi killed Sasaki. The sun blinding him was actually referenced in an old samurai comic and movie. The comic was called Kazuro Okami, Lone Wolf and Cub. The movie was better known here in America as Shogun Assassin. And there's a bit that sort of references that with a sword fight between Ito Agami and another samurai sent to execute him. Well, Ito Agami has his son Daigoro, his infant son Daigoro, on his back, and he's wearing a headband that has a mirror on it. So Ito Agami ducks, mirror catches the sun and blinds his opponent.
And he kills him.
So that.
Okay. Can we talk about how this match basically had, like, almost no connection to any of that and was not nearly as cool?
Well, I understand that, but I think I know I think they may have been trying to reenact that in its own way, even though
they tried.
and it failed absolutely miserably, because from all accounts, it was a very quick sword fight, whereas...
Yeah, I was going to say, did Musashi and Sasaki roll around on the ground for 2 hours and do nothing of any substance whatsoever?
No, I think it was... No, I think it pretty much... I think they were trying to reference the famous duel and failed miserably in the process.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I don't know how much more
you could fail. I really don't know how much more you could fail to replicate like a historic fight in that manner. Oh my goodness.
I'm just gonna admit to you and to the world here on Place to Be Nation and the Pro Wrestling Only podcast feed that, yeah, I could not get through this damn match. I mean,
I had to skip around. I just clear as day. I had to skip around in this first one. It was one of, honestly, it might have been the worst pro wrestling match I've ever seen in my entire life. I am not even like exaggerating when I say this. It is just the first hour of that match is literally...
And wait. Before you go any further, we're tagging this with the first hour of this match.
Yes. The first hour of this match is legit these two, like, putting on the softest wrestling holds in a ring on the island. I can't even honestly remember things they did in that whole first hour, except Inoki hot-dogging for, like, you know, like 20 minutes before getting in the ring, and then Saito and him just like rolling around on the mat with doing nothing of any substance.
It kind of makes you wonder why they have this island death match, and yet they're still a ring.
Oh god, it was absolutely like embarrassing.
And to make matters worse, to make matters much worse than they already are, the commentary was just so dry. It was like, you know, when you watch certain, like, Noah or All Japan shows that are on Samurai, when they weren't really there, and you just had the guy in the studio talking, you know what I'm talking about? Like, that really dry tone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, on certain when they do certain matches from, you know, wherever. and it was just really dry, or just really dry and you know, barely descriptive. It was just, you know, like you were watching a tape match, basically. That's kind of how this came off. So you have this very dry commentary style, while at the same time, there is a helicopter.
Oh God! Yes,
the entire goddamn match.
Oh my God! It is so obnoxious, and I just hate noises, background noise like that. I don't know if I'm, my ears are just really sensitive, but oh my God, it is like the worst thing for me. And okay, let alone, I don't think these guys striked each other at all for at least over an hour. Like, I don't think there was, and I'm not even, like, joking. Like, I don't think they actually hit each other, like, within, like, an hour. It was unreal. I've never seen anything like it. They were just literally grabbing each other in holds on the ground for...
Yeah, well, you know, it's that mat wrestling that we like to romanticize so much, but really, sometimes Jesus, it can be horrific. I mean,
I love good mat work and all that stuff, but good God, I mean, it was not even good. It was just nothing. It was just sitting in side headlocks and like just chin lock for freaking 20 minutes, like tied up in body scissors, just sitting there. I mean, good God, man. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it is not fun to watch.
And this was the first hour of a match.
That's the sad part. That is the sad part, is that there's another hour of this that you sit through. And granted, yes, they pick up things a little bit. But, like, it's just even the... when there's dead space, there's so much dead space, like, when they're not doing anything, they're just sitting, like, laying there, doing nothing, you know what, this match, it reminds me of, like, when Tommy Wiseau made The Room. Like, they thought they were making, like, this masterpiece here, I think, this, like, artistic, like, masterpiece of, like, oh, you know, we're, like, you know, trying to match, like, this legendary duel from the old days of Japan, and it's like, look, it looks so like dramatic, and it just ended up being like the worst thing ever. You know what though, at least The Room was funny. At least The Room was a funny movie. This wasn't funny. This was so bad it was bad.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't ironically bad. This was just horrible.
It's like, and finally they're like, they start like hitting each other, and it's like, hey guys, let's pull back a little bit here. I want to get hurt a little too much here. This is an island death match after all.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so much disconnect there for me. It's like they call it an island death match, but they're just rolling around for hour plus doing nothing of any painful things to each other at all.
I don't know. This was in 1987, so I'm not sure. I think this is, you know, 2 years before Atsushi Onita would redefine the word deathmatch.
Oh yeah, I was thinking, Jeff, and that's so funny that you mentioned that. I'm like, wow, how much better would this match be if Atsushi Onita was in it? that's what I was thinking like the whole time. I'm like, this would have been actually entertaining to watch.
Well,
like,
think of how much better a lot of wrestling matches would be if Atsushi Onita were.
Very, very good point.
think about how your average episode of WWE Raw would be better if Atsushi Onita were in it.
Incredibly true. And then like, finally, like, Inoki like headbutts Saito like really late in the match, and he starts bleeding everywhere. And then like they're like staggering for about 10 minutes on the outside, and then like Saito like hits him with something. I don't even know what it was, because not like you could see anything, because at that point it got so dark out that they're lighting fires on the freaking island.
Yeah.
So you can see what's going on.
I did say on the morning of that's probably incorrect, honestly, because but I mean I actually have no idea what time this was, but you're right that it does get dark during the night does fall during this match. And whose idea was this? Well, Inoki's probably, but
I had to have been. And I love Inoki, but good God, this had his fingerprints all over it. But I mean, it just finally like mercifully ends when like when Oki just locks him in a sleeper on the outside and just like chokes him out when they're both bleeding everywhere. It's like, you know, it's like, you can't tell me like that could have been an hour shorter and like like an hour and a half shorter.
Yeah, probably an hour and a half. I think is what we're looking at here. Oh, but I mean, and again, you know, we could see, like, you know, especially how Inoki was acting during the match, like, you know, when he was refusing to come out, you know, and get in the ring. You can kind of maybe see how he was trying to reenact Miyamoto Musashi, you know, showing up late to this duel. But, you know, historically, again, if they were going to do that, Inoki should have squashed him. You know, in that historic context, you know?
Exactly. Not freaking roll around and do, like, the worst type of mat work there is in wrestling for that long. It's just, oh, my goodness. It was unbearable. That was just awful, 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 awful stuff.
It's not as if Inoki and Saito were like some schlubs either. I mean, Saito was considered one of the best wrestlers of his day, honestly.
Right, exactly. And that's the crazy thing about it. But like, that for me, it just shows you that any two great wrestlers can just have an awful, awful, awful match.
They can.
I would legit watch a match where two guys are so green that like they're messing moves up than this, because at least those guys are trying to do stuff and like they're doing stuff with urgency, even though it looks bad. But like at least it's kind of fun to watch. Even Charmella Jenna Marasco there from like TNA, which was really bad. But like, you know, like at least it's just like, you know, it's kind of a fun disaster piece. This is just
a disaster.
A dragging, boring, just no sense of urgency whatsoever. It's such a disconnect. It's like, aren't these two supposed to hate each other, Jeff? Aren't these two supposed to, like, have a blood feud, and they're just rolling around like idiots?
A blood feud to the point where they're going to the site of one of the most famous duels in Japanese history to settle their score. Yeah. And, you know, it reminds me, there was like a tweet. I think there's some parody account out there called Indie Wrestler or something. But, you know, it's a parody of, you know, independent wrestlers. And there's a tweet. One of the tweets I actually found completely hilarious was, you know, we're going to start the blow off match to our 6-month blood feud with a collar and elbow tie up. It's like, it's pretty much that on like a 2-hour scale.
Yeah, that's exactly. Now I can't. And yeah, that's the thing that bothers me too with some of the types of those matches where they're supposed to be these big like all out brawls and stuff, and it's just like, no, like I could have watched you do that in arena, like, dude, like I don't need to see you go to a freaking remote island somewhere and just lock inside headlocks. Give me a break, man. So stupid.
Yeah,
what an awful, awful display. This is an embarrassing milestone in the history of pro wrestling, in my opinion.
Yes, in all pro wrestling, not just New Japan Pro Wrestling.
It's a mockery of the sport, the entertainment aspect. It just makes me. It's one of those things that will actually make me embarrassed to like be a fan of wrestling. Sometimes
it was not sport. And it was definitely not entertainment. So yeah, it was something. I think this is like an art film. It's just like a failed art film.
Right.
You know, something you make something an art student would make as his final project in film school. You know.
Yeah, like look how deep this is. It's like, no, it's not. It's bad. It's not. It's just not. It's not good, dude. It's not.
Yeah, you think you're being deep. Please. You think look at the isolation of them as they grapple with their self doubt on an, you know, adrift on an island.
It's 100%. That's exactly like what I like got out of that. It's just man. It's like so try hard, like deep, and I think that Inoki tried to like connect with that stuff, but it's just, I don't know, like it's just, it's unwatchable. I'm telling you, don't even, please, like,
yeah,
I'm
do not.
You, I am begging you, pleading with you, do not waste 2 hours of your life watching this first one, this first Island Death match. It is the worst, man. It is the worst of, like, professional wrestling. And I've seen some very bad pro wrestling over the years. This is bad, man. This is not, like, laugh at bad. This is, like, oh my god, I want to blow my brains out bad. Like,
well, watch out now.
I'm sorry, yeah, but, like, probably a little much there, but it's like I had to, like, slap myself awake a few times when they were just it was awful. You know what, like, the second one, you know what, actually a watchable match. I'm not saying
it's only marginally more watchable. There's a lot more entertainment value in this, but believe it or not, despite the complete disaster that was the match on October the 4th, 1987, New Japan would do this again on, on December the 18th of 1991.
That's why I love Inoki. Like, he had deluded himself so much into believing that actually worked the first time. Like, he's like, all right, let's do it again. And it's like, oh boy, here we go.
Now, The background to this, we actually discussed on a previous episode of this show. The background of this match was they were going to have what would end up becoming the first of the yearly tradition of the January 4th Tokyo Dome shows.
Oh yeah.
And we discussed this on episode 2 of Strong Style History, which you can see now on the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed if you scroll down deep enough on the SoundCloud page. When we talked about the very first of the January 4th Tokyo Dome shows, which was known in this country as the WCW New Japan Super Show 2 in Japan, it was called Super Warriors in Tokyo Dome. And the background of this match was originally there was supposed to be a match between Antonio Inoki and Tiger Jeet Singh on this show. And Hiroshi Hase, who at the time, you know, he's now, you know, a member of the Japanese government, but he's as a part of the cabinet, in fact. But at the time, he was still kind of not really a young lion, but he was, you know, he was an up-and-coming superstar. I mean, he and Great Muta were having, a feud for the ages and all that. Well, Hase begged Inoki to take his place in that match, yes. which would indeed end up happening. And it was actually probably one of the best matches on the show at that. But prior to that, Inoki told Hase that he would agree to it, but he had to get permission from Tiger Jeet Singh. So Hase went to Canada, because that's where Singh actually was from, and beg permission of Tiger Jeet Singh, to which he agreed, but also beat the high holy shit out of Hase in the process. So this would lead to the second Island Death Match when all was said and done between Hiroshi Hase and Tiger Jeet Singh. And this one was had a lot more entertainment value just because of the vulgarity that came from Tiger Jeet Singh's mouth.
Oh yes.
As he was walking on Ganrujima Island to try to get to the match, because, you know, they went to, like, the wrong end of the island or some shit.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Oh man. I love Tiger Jeet Singh. Like, that guy does not try to pretend he's a good pro wrestler, and he just beats on you. And I appreciate that about him. This was not like Inoki and Saito trying to, like, make some BS, like, artistic, like, comparisons. This was Tiger Jeet Singh just being Tiger Jeet Singh and, like, just being a nasty little SOB in the ring, at first this started a little tepid, and they were doing a little bit of the mat work stuff. I'm like, oh no, here we go again.
Well, wait a minute, hold on, wait. Before we go there, though, compare and contrast, you know, the beginnings of the match between the two matches, because whereas Antonio Inoki took his sweet time coming out of his tent and getting in the ring, Tiger G Singh set fire to his tent.
Oh, that's right. Incredible. Incredible,
I,
man.
I think by this point, I'd have to look. I haven't looked too hard. I think Tiger G Singh might have done some work in FMW by this time. Could be wrong. I could be getting the details backwards, because I'm not bothered enough to, you know, do the intense research required on the career of Tiger Jeet Singh to get that right. But you could definitely see there was a little bit more of an FMW influence on this match, oddly enough. You know, starting with the tent being set ablaze. And it should be noted that Tiger Jeet Singh had absolutely no sense of color coordination either in his ring gear, because I forget what color. I think he was wearing like blue or red trunks, or, you know, he was wearing like a singlet, and then he had these, you know, tube socks,
white and red Converse on.
White and red Converse with green and yellow stripes on his athletic socks.
My God, they were doing some of the hold stuff, and then eventually at one point, like, Tiger just takes one of his Converse off and just starts beating Hase with it, which is I'm always for guys taking their shoes off mid-match and just started smacking them with their shoes. So, like, this is automatically like 100 times better of a match than the first one, just for that.
Yeah,
it was great. Like, I just enjoyed that. Like, that spot was like so funny.
Yeah.
And they kind of did a little bit more stuff in the ring, and then eventually it just spilled out of the ring, and it got really, really ugly.
And
very
quickly. By this point, both Hase and Tiger G Singh are both gushing.
Oh yeah, Singh like busted him open with that like saber thing he carried around.
Yeah,
with him.
Yeah.
That the little skinny like blade or whatever.
It's like a fencing foil almost.
Fencing foil. Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. Yeah, I couldn't think of it. The word there. Yeah, fencing. Yeah, the fencing foil. And he just freaking like busted Hase open with that. And, like, Hase like brought him over into the bushes and like busted him open with like, I don't even know what the like thing it was. Oh, it was the thing that connected the rope. That's right. I think it was
like the post. Yeah, at the beginning of the match, for some reason, Hase is dismantling the top rope off the ring. Like, I of course, this was the zeitgeist of indie wrestling in 2017, was the top rope falling off.
Oh, yeah.
And here's Hase intentionally just dismantling it. I couldn't figure out why he did that. But yeah, he had like the hook that holds the actual cable of the ropes, quote unquote, and he busts Tiger G Singh open with it.
And oddly enough, they would end up doing the same spot in the War Games match. I think like it was a year later. I think.
I think you might be right. Yeah.
Yeah. With Oh geez, Larry Zbysko and company and the Dangerous Alliance in that match. Yeah, that was so. Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting time for that spot. They were just busted open at that time. They were just smacking each other on the outside, on the grass and everything, and then like Hase put a sleeper on him and on the outside, and Singh got back up, Hase tried to like choke him with like caution rope that they had around, and try to protect the photographers and everything. He like grabbed that, started choking Singh with that. Oh, it was just a brawl, man. Like what the first one should have been.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, let's not get it twisted, though. Yeah, we could think of, like, you know, these quote unquote hilarious bits in the match. But let's not get it twisted. This match was also still no damn good at all. But, you know, it was much more. It's definitely much more shorter and watchable Because I think this one only went like 27 minutes, I think. I think.
Yeah, Hase finally, I think, yeah, he Hase like finally beat him with the oh geez, the I always forget the name of the move.
Uranage?
Uranage. Yep.
He like he won by KO too.
Yeah,
He it should be noted, both of these matches were ended. I think the first one was a TKO, technical knockout. This one was an actual knockout in the ring. So, but I mean, I guess we could say that yes, this was a period of time when wrestling wasn't quote unquote afraid to experiment with
Oh
wacky
no.
with completely out of this world match stipulations. Because I'm pretty sure that they wouldn't do this today, even though outdoor shows are still not really alien. I mean, I think the annual I think Combat Zone's annual Tournament of Death is held outdoors, I think.
Yes, it is.
It is,
Yes, it
yeah,
is. Yep.
so
Oh, Delaware. Yep. Out in the lovely Delaware sun.
yeah, so but I mean
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Like wrestling, I think at this time, just they wanted to try to break some boundaries and stuff and do something, some really weird things. And it was a kind of a weird time and transition period in wrestling in general, in that early 90s period. And it was in the late 80s, early 90s. But yeah. Oh, another thing I forgot to mention, and like the first one was like the awful like fake CPR they did on like on Saito like, after
oh God,
the
yes.
match. Oh my God, they were like acting like the dude was dead, like Inoki had actually killed him in cold blood. And, like I know like that, I guess that was the in line with the story, but
But yeah.
like Jesus, it was so
Yeah.
ridiculous. Like dude, you would have
And obviously
super.
Saito survived because he would end up be doing commentary for the second Island Death Match.
It was like the most awkward thing I've ever seen. I'm like, oh my God, they're really doing CPR to him right now. Like they're really doing CPR to this guy. Like,
Well, I
oh
mean,
my God.
is it really any different though? Like at the end of a match, when a big title match, when Young Lions are rushing in the ring to give like an oxygen bottle and the bottled oxygen and putting the ice pack on.
Yeah,
Is it really that so much different than that?
that's true. I guess it was, but I think this was just
I mean, I
another
think
one.
it's maybe a little overblown, but yeah, I mean, you try to actually imply that, Inoki actually did kill Saito, which,
Guarantee you, Inoki, that was Inoki's idea. Guarantee you, the
yeah.
stretcher job, everything. Oh yeah, that was
I
had
mean,
to have been.
Inoki had some wonderful ideas, but I mean, I think it could never be understated that he had some really shitty ones too,
Oh yeah,
and
no, right? Like, yeah, I mean,
But I mean,
he,
I guess that's just the law of averages, though. I mean, if you're going to go that far, you're going to have some duffers eventually.
Oh yeah, no, it's funny because like, Inoki, I don't. It's kind of a weird. I know it's kind of in a way it's a weird comparison, but on it does kind of make sense. Like him and Vince aren't as different as you would think.
No, not at all.
Really, like they really aren't. It's like they, because they both had some like really wild like ideas that some were just a little too wild, and this was one of those cases where it was like, okay, well, that was a little insane. Don't know if that was the right thing to do, but it just the way it was executed too, just it's like I said, it just didn't connect the whole with the whole purpose. It was, when you call something an Island Death Match, that's not the match I expect you to be working when you say Island Death Match. It's not
Right, but
like.
but again, I think this was before. I mean, in the case of the first one between Inoki and Saito, this was before. This was 2 years before Atsushi Onita would redefine our concept of a death match, because I think this is more in line of what they used to call the Texas death match. Where it was like a fall. If I'm remembering correctly, because my knowledge of Southern wrestling tradition is not perhaps what it should be, but I believe it was a just a false count anywhere, just absolute brawl, until one guy it drops, if I remember
Oh,
correctly.
yeah. It's just all you really need to know. It just was not good. It was just a very, very big time failed, like concept art, sort of thing that was tried and just did not work at all. It and I don't know, like, I don't, would you even say this had much influence on wrestling in any way? I mean, I don't know.
No, I don't think it did. And honestly, I honestly think that the second one was more influenced than influential, because I think it was
Yeah,
more
right.
influenced by FMW. I think IWA was operating by this point too, I think. Inspired by FMW. I could be
Oh
wrong.
yeah. Wing, I believe Wing was
Oh
too.
yeah, and Wing, yeah. So I mean, there was clearly a zeitgeist which they kind of tapped into, not really. I mean, it's not as if that FMW invented blood in wrestling either.
No,
But
oh no. Yeah, I mean, like, and the thing was, I think, like, Tiger Jeet Singh was such a better fit for that, like, match anyway, because that's just what Tiger Jeet Singh does. That's like, he never pretended to be a good wrestler, like I said. Like, all the stuff with Inoki, he would brawl Inoki into the stands, and, like, he would just, be reckless and everything. Saito and just Inoki, they tried to have this just, like, this absurd, like,
Match for
wrestling
the ages,
match,
yes.
yeah, and out in the freaking middle of nowhere, it's just it was just so tacky and just so, oh God. Yeah, hopefully something, that never we never have to see ever again, in general. It's just I would laugh if just we just end up seeing, like, Okada, like, versus, like, I don't know.
Kenny Omega,
Okada versus Omega rematch is going to be on the like.
I'm Gon Rujima,
That would be just. I honestly would be all for it. It's just because it would just be such a disaster, and because
and Dave Meltzer will give it 7 stars.
because like though that like Kenny would like forget like he's like serious New Japan guy for like 5 minutes, and he'd do some like very, very reckless Ibushi inspired things. And so, it would just be like Omega would probably just like do like some awful like stunts, like DDT related
Oh
stunts.
yeah. He'd go back to his Golden Lovers era self for a hot few minutes. But
Yeah,
you know,
like,
and that, but you know, that, honestly, you know, though, you know, and sorry to start fantasy booking this, but Okada having his lucha-based training too. who knows? Who knows?
Ibushi be a special guest ref for this too, because he just want to have, because like he'd forget like he's refing, and then he just like jump off of something
And
and
he'll
like
be
into the water.
doing it. He'll be reffing half a match whilst suspended, hanging by his knees, from a tree or something. Yeah, into a kiddie pool filled with lime jello.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so that would be an A+ pro wrestling
that
experience,
would
maybe.
be the ultimate pro wrestling right there.
Yeah.
But getting a little bit serious again, but yeah, obviously after this one, New Japan never attempted this match ever again. Probably for if I had to guess, probably because it would turn out to be more expensive to
Oh
put
yeah.
on the
I
match
couldn't
than, I mean, because remember
I can't
there
even
was no
imagine.
audience for this match, so there were no tickets sold.
Nope.
So
No.
how, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what the cost of doing this, and then getting permission from Shimonoseki. I'm guessing Shimonoseki would be the local principality that ran the island. So
Oh my
getting
God.
permission from the Shimonoseki prefectural government or what have you,
One thing out the freaking helicopter film the damn thing.
and I'm probably screwing up the terminology there, but yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I can't even imagine like how they probably didn't recoup nothing on
I know.
doing those. Like,
Oh,
it was
I'm
just.
sorry. It was Yamaguchi Prefecture. My bad. It's Yamaguchi
Oh
Prefecture.
yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah. And then the helicopter, which somehow the helicopter noise was, oddly absent from the Hase Singh version.
It was thankfully they must have figured it out, like, that how to not have that in there. Oh yeah, the one thing to mention too is that I guess the one like callback here was that in the second one, the Saito was the one that like checked on Singh to see if he was like, you know, like able to
Oh,
continue.
yeah, that's
So I
right.
was like, oh wow, look at that little bit of continuity there. Like, wow. I guess that's one thing to like be the cherry on top of the shit sundae. I mean, like, cool, wow.
Yeah, but again, let's not confuse it. Even though we obviously preferred the Hiroshi Hase Tiger Jeet Singh version of the Island Death Match, neither of these matches were really any good. And I would only recommend seeking out the second one just for just for laughs.
Yeah, it's
The
not even
first
that
match.
bad of a watch. Like, there's some funny moments in that one too. That just like you could actually laugh at. But just God, the Inoki Saito one is just absolute pure garbage of wrestling. It's not in any way entertaining, in any way like watchable. It's not. It's awful. The way it's filmed is bad. Once it gets dark, it's like impossible to see what they're doing. It's unbearable. It's unbearable.
You almost have to wonder if they actually forgot that the sun was going to go down at some point and didn't actually have, stage lighting
It
to.
was like opposite WrestleMania 31.
Oh, God. Oh, boy.
Where they like started the pre-show and like the freaking sun was just like blaring into the guy's eyes on the
Oh,
pre-show.
yeah.
Oh God, that was awful. Yeah, this is like legit like the opposite version of
Yeah.
that.
Well, and again, it wouldn't be the last time well, no, I take that back. I'm messing that up. Forget that. Forget I said anything. So, anyway, yeah, in summary, yeah, these were not good matches, but again, if we're going to actually examine the history of New Japan Pro Wrestling, you have to take the rough with the smooth here.
Oh
And
yeah,
yeah, and you
there's
I mean, and I know a lot of times. I mean, and I confess on Twitter that I'm, I half jokingly say that I'm a, shameless New Japan shill, but I'm not blind to when, something is just not good. And this definitely qualifies as not being good.
Oh
So
boy.
let this be a lesson to us all that the history of any wrestling promotion, any professional wrestler, is hardly spotless, no matter how legendary or how well regarded they are. And we're just talking about, well, I'm not even talking about, personally, I'm just talking about match quality.
Yeah.
Nobody has a spotless record at all, period. Nobody, not even Misawa, does not have a spotless record as far as that.
No. And it's like Inoki, the thing with Inoki was that he was very big on crossovers and like tie-ins to things,
Right.
as we all know. Sometimes you just cannot force those things. This was one of those times they tried to force that story that you told that
Oh,
you said this was based on,
oh
and
the duel, yes,
yeah, and
yeah.
it was just not in the context. It just didn't work because just the way that they wanted to work the match and then what they were kind of basing it on, it didn't connect whatsoever. It just wasn't connected in any way. It just, yeah, there was a few nods here and there, but like it just most of it just didn't like actually cooperate with the actual original legend,
Right.
so
But again, but
it's
we can
just.
also look at this as being of a time when pro wrestling was perhaps not, it was less afraid to take risks for to go to push the envelope. As before, I mean, like, we could make the argument that WWE now would never try to attempt to recreate the Attitude Era because, number one, they're the top game in town, and there's so much, corporate money tied to things now that
Oh yeah.
they can't afford to take such a huge risk like they did back in the late 90s when they were on the ropes. And and you know, the same could be said. It's not the fault of Bushiroad or anybody else. I mean, it's just, I mean, I don't think Inoki would do things like this nowadays. I don't think he would. He would be playing it safe because it's too much of a risk and too much of a sinkhole financially, especially, you know, if you hold these expensive to produce matches without paid tickets.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the crazy thing for me. It's just like it's that like this was done basically with no audience, no like I mean, yeah, like they have, of course there's been some really cool empty arena matches, over the years. I mean, there's been, stuff like the Funk and Lawler match in Memphis was really fun. Then you had during the halftime of the Super Bowl there, Rock and Mankind
Yes.
was really fun.
Yeah, I remember
Yeah,
that.
because they
That
were
was really
yeah
fun.
they were both fun brawls and very hate filled, and especially with the first Island Death match, there was just nothing. It just didn't work
Yeah, for
because
so
there
for
was none.
yeah, as you said, for something that was supposed to be like this blood feud, it just didn't have that oomph that was needed to
Yeah,
put it over.
and especially when there's not like a crowd there to be like to kind of juice you up a little bit, doing all that mat grappling and stuff, it just does not connect nearly as well.
Yeah, I would agree. So yeah, in summary, we would not recommend these matches. If you must see them, definitely stick to the Hase versus Tiger Jeet Singh from December the 18th, 1991, just for comedy value, if nothing else. But again, sometimes when examining the history of New Japan Pro Wrestling, you get to we examine the ridiculous as well as the sublime. Our producer today was Chris Damasceno. Lawrence, if you'd like to plug yourself once more.
Just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at LOB_3. That's pretty much it. Just kept catching up with a lot of wrestling these days, so you can talk to me about that if you want.
You can find me, Jeffrey Wessel, at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. We also do the Strong Style Story podcast at strongstylestory.podomatic.com and searching iTunes for the Strong Style Story podcast. Our next recording for that show is due to happen on Mother's Day, May the 14th, following the Wrestling Dontaku string of shows. I'm actually going to be traveling to Glory Pro next Sunday, so that's why we're not going to be doing that show that week. And we'd also like to apologize. We actually had intended to do this show earlier this month. Actually, by the time this comes out, it will be the month of May, so we technically didn't have an April show. So perhaps on the 14th, we'll try to do another Strong Style History for you here at the Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only podcast feed. Once again, we appreciate your listenership. These are some pretty popular shows that we've produced, and we're really quite proud of them. So we thank you for listening. But that's all we have time for today. We'll see you later in the month, hopefully. And until then, on behalf of Lawrence O'Brien and Chris Damasceno, I am Jeffrey Wessel. Thank you, take care, and goodbye.